How's it going, guys? You're listening to Treetop Talks. I'm Jay and Andy over there. And
we're listening to some Jimi Hendrix live at Berkeley for our background music today. Our topic for the week is going to be site selection for your tree, and our species highlight is going to be bur oak.
Quercus macrocarpa, one of my favorites. So. Yeah. Alright, let's start with site selection.
Yeah.
What do we got?
Well, let's talk about soil type first, because really one of the main things when you're trying to decide where to put your tree is you got to consider what type of soil does that tree like.
Right. And so we got a bunch of things that go into determining a soil. That's my dog, by the way. We have a special guest here with us. His name is Noah. He's a puppy. So the soil, Mr. Sherwood, it's made up of sand, silt, or clay. And which one you have is going to determine how well water is able to drain through your soil. And that's really important because some trees, they like it a little bit on the wet side. Some trees like it a little bit on the dry side. So you can't, if you put a wet tree in a dry spot, you know, it's not going to be a good time. So you want to tell us how those sand, silt, and clay percentages or amounts that are in the soil really kind of affect how water drains, Mr. Sherwood?
Oh yeah, definitely. So a sandy soil is going to have the most drainage, therefore being the driest soil that you're going to be able to find or have. So if your soil has a lot of clay in it, on the other hand, it's going to be very wet soil, it won't drain very well, and there's certain species of trees that really enjoy that. And so it's really just a matter of, once you pick out your species of tree that you like and you want to find a spot for it, just go ahead and Google that tree species and type in soil type right after the name of it. And it should pop up with what type of soil that tree is really going to thrive in. For some examples, let's say, let's go with a birch. Is it typically going to enjoy a...
It's going to enjoy a clay soil, something that's kind of by a river. They like it a little bit on the wet side. And so, something like a Black Hill spruce that we highlighted last week, they'll be okay in sand. They don't really like to be wet. They don't tolerate it very well. They have disease issues develop, and it's just not healthy for the tree, so.
Yeah, another easy way to try to think about this is, if you ever see that tree growing in nature, note where it's growing.
Right, that's
Is it growing on a hilltop with more exposure to the elements, or is it growing down by the river bottom where it's going to be wet, softer soil, and other conditions that go along with that?
So, if you're a homeowner and you kind of want to figure out what your soil type is, go out into your backyard, and there's a really easy way to do it. Just take a shovel, dig down maybe a foot, kind of get a handful of that soil in there, and just kind of feel it. If it feels really sticky and smooth, you're going to be more towards a clay. If it's really, really gritty and it kind of falls apart in your hand,
it'll feel grainy.
Really grainy type feel, you're going to be looking at a sand. Now, a lot of soils are a combination of sands and clays, and silts. And so if you really, let's say you're planning on doing some pretty massive planting and you got some specialty trees that you really want to know what your soil type is, send it into the university. It's about, I think it's like $20 here in Minnesota
something
to have the
like
U of
that.
N tell you exactly what your soil type is and
pH
and nutrients. And that's maybe a good segue into our next topic here relating to soil.
Yeah, let's talk about pH.
Yeah, parts hydrogen.
So what this is it tells us if your soil is acidic or alkaline or basic. Alkaline and basic mean the same thing. They're used interchangeably.
Correct.
But just the point is that those are high pH numbers, whereas acidic soils are going to have a low pH number.
And that scale is on a 1 to 14 numerical scale.
So a 7 pH is neutral pH.
Correct.
That's a pretty good spot to be, if not a little bit lower than neutral. Most trees are generally going to like a slightly acidic soil, somewhere in the range of 5.8 to 6.8, 6.5, somewhere around there.
Somewhere in that. Now, and that's kind of cool, too, when you're picking out a tree species. If you're in the Minnesota area, we got some alkaline soils around. I know our soils run a little bit higher, like 7.2, 7.5.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something you want to consider when you're picking out a tree is because a lot of trees don't necessarily grow super well in alkaline soils, but it's more of a tolerance factor. And the same thing with acidity.
Right.
Some trees, they might not necessarily like acidic soils, but they tolerate it really well.
Mm-hmm. And there's just on the flip side of that, there's other species that particularly will not grow in an alkaline soil.
Correct.
Or other species that particularly will not grow in a basic soil. So that's, I mean, you'll probably find that information on the same website that tells you what soil texture that you need.
I would think you would be able to find that pretty easily.
If you get a
soil test done, they're going to tell you that right on the sheet. They're going to give you a little number, and pH will be right next to it, and then that'll just solve most of your problems there. So.
Right. They'll tell you everything you need to know about pH, pretty much.
Yeah, I don't know if we would necessarily. We could get really in-depth of pH, but I don't think our listeners would appreciate that.
No, I think they got the gist of it, I think. So let's talk about exposure, then.
Yeah, let's do it. So what do we mean when we say exposure?
We've got multiple elements at play here. Wind and sun, I think, are the main two elements.
I think those are the two big ones. Two really easy ones to note. So, you know, if you need full sun for your tree, you're going to want to try and find a south-facing something, you know.
South-facing area.
Yeah, somewhere where it is not shaded in the south, because then it's going to get sun for a good portion of the day, if not the whole day. Mm-hmm. You know, the sun rises in the east and sets in the west. And so south, you're always getting exposure. And on the exact opposite end, if you have a tree that wants it's shade, you know, there's some trees out there that like shade, you're going to put it on the north side of your house. And there's,
or other large trees. If there's an established tree there on the south side, it's going to give shade to that tree. So yeah, buildings, trees, anything else, any other large structures.
Maybe we let's get into wind a little bit here, because I think that's a fun one for trees. Because
it is.
Wind is an area that can actually save you money. Now, whether you like trees or not, if you live in a northern climate, you know northern winds are just pretty harsh.
Especially in the winter.
Especially during the winter. And that results in heat loss from your home, you know. Mm-hmm. You got a northern wall, it's constantly getting hit by wind, it's constantly going to be cold. Now, if you put some trees in front of your house, so maybe some evergreens mixed with some deciduous, that gives you what they call a windbreak. And the trees actually will act as a way of blocking that north wind from hitting your house, and you'll use less heat during the winter.
Right.
Your house will be a little bit warmer. And so I think that's probably my favorite aspect of wind when it comes into site selection.
And actually, speaking of using trees as protection for your house, they can also be used to block the house from the summer sun.
Right.
So if you plant a large shade tree, such as maybe a honey locust is, you know, one good example.
Yeah.
As a large shade tree or a maple, right, plenty of options, on the south side of your house, that'll shade your house in the summertime, and then when it drops its leaves in the winter, it'll let the sun shine on your house better, and it'll slightly warm your house in the winter, and it'll provide a lot of cooling in the summer.
Right.
So, it's just another example of how positioning trees in relation to your house is really crucial. Yeah, it can be a big impact on the tree and on your house, energy savings, all of that together.
And you can even do this on a small scale, guys. Let's say
let's say
you have a smaller backyard and your northern side of your house doesn't have much room. You can get some dwarf varieties of arborvitae, spruce, pine, whatever. You know, they don't get full size. They're not going to be 70 feet tall. You know, they might hit 20 feet at mature height.
20, 30 feet.
Yeah, something like that.
Not
and
huge.
You can, you know, you can plant those right there and use them as a row. And there's a lot of options for landscape. You want to, like, close off your backyard, you know.
Whatever. Use them as a hedge, yeah.
We kind of got on a tangent here. What else do we got on our list about site selection here?
Well, the next thing I've been thinking about is how close your tree is to an object, especially objects overhead.
Oh, yeah.
Primarily, the biggest thing I see as an issue is power lines.
Power lines are number one.
When you want to plant a tree, look up.
If there's
anything above it, then you're very limited on the species you can plant there.
Very
there are
limited.
Certain trees you can plant there.
Only dwarfs.
But, yeah, only dwarfs, or maybe a crabapple, maybe a Japanese tree lilac, and even that's pushing it. There are certain things that are short enough, but that's pretty pretty sketchy. Just generally, don't plant under a power line or close to it.
And so the obvious one reason being for that is your tree is going to grow up into the power line, you think. And you're like, oh, that's not going to be a good time. But what's even worse is if it grows into a power line, the electrical company is going to come and prune it. Now, I don't know, I don't want to generalize here, but most of the people working in the electric industry probably don't consider themselves professional tree pruners. Maybe
that's not true.
Maybe
actually.
In the fact when they know how to prune a tree for an electrical.
There's
post.
An International Society of Arboriculture that particularly has a certification for power line.
I'm talking about the the big electrical companies though that are just going
right,
to come out and hack your tree off.
They only hire ISA certified guys though. That's definitely they're all professionals. There's no question about that. But that does not mean that there isn't occasionally bad practices. So,
that's more what I was getting at, too, is they're gonna prune your tree not for the health of the tree. They're going to prune it so it doesn't run into the electrical lines. They're going to get it before it gets to that point. So what
they
do...
different ideas in mind than what you want for your tree.
So not ragging on the professionality of them.
Right.
But
they know what they're doing, but they have different
goals.
They're
going to prune it, They're going to prune it in a way that is very, very unattractive, and you're going to be left with this half of a stump of a tree.
Yeah.
And then...
You don't want that,
Nobody wants that.
Let's just go with that. So,
look up before you plant stuff.
Yeah. And then, closely related to that, we were saying plant trees around your house, but just not too close to your house. That's another thing I see too often. Too close to houses or buildings... And then the roots are ruining your house's foundation.
Right.
Your trunk is growing almost even into the wall or the roof. You got branches hanging over your roof. That can get dangerous. That can get costly. Just keep it at least a good 30, 40 feet away from your house.
Right.
50 if it's a big tree. Sometimes more for the really big trees like bur oak, which we're going to talk about later. That you're really going to want way out in the open. Don't put that anywhere near a building or a power line or a street.
You also want to take into account what type of wood. If it's a softwood tree, you want to give it more space from your house because they are more prone to fall over in the wind. We had a gal in River Falls here. I walked by her house every day, and there was this willow tree, and it was just leaning about a foot over her house, and I go, that's going to fall over with the next wind. And then one day I was walking by, and sure enough, here's a tree tipped on her house. So, it's... In relative location to the house, that's super important because you don't want to have to. You're planting a tree that's going to be there for hopefully decades, and it's going to get
longer
in some cases.
Centuries.
Right, it's crazy. And I think what you said about that foundation issue, too, I think that's personally just super cool that a tree can just slowly but surely its roots will rip through a concrete foundation pretty easily.
They tear through rocks.
If it's too close to the house.
If it's too close to the house, right.
It does not care. It will just rip right through your foundation, and that's just not going to be fun for anyone.
No. You're not going to want that.
No.
So, just something to consider, And then, on the same note, same thing goes for trees with sidewalks or streets nearby. Just give them a good distance there. They don't want to have to try and grow underneath the street. They'll ruin the street or sidewalk in certain cases. You see that a lot. So planting a tree between the sidewalk and street, generally a bad location. That's not enough room for a tree to grow. We call those tree coffins in the industry. Those just aren't a good spot for your tree. You're planting it there only to die. Plant it on the opposite side of the sidewalk. So I think you're going to have street, and then a patch of grass between the sidewalk and street, and then you're going to plant the tree opposite of that even.
Right.
So not between the two, that's... just not a good spot for a tree, not enough room.
Also, maybe check your city ordinances, too. I know in the town I live in, 9 feet into my yard, they consider that a boulevard tree, and so that belongs to the city. Great if you want, the city pruning your stuff,
but
let's say they want to run a power line through there or something, they're just going to cut your tree down because it's too close to the road. So another thing to take into consideration, you should be able to easily find out that information on your city's website, what the rules are for planting trees there. Make sure you avoid any future issues, because, like you said, they don't like being really close to the roads anyways. It's too much compaction.
Yeah. There's very, very few species that can live there in that spot without...
They can live,
damage.
But not for long.
Yeah, true. They surely won't thrive.
It will not be a very healthy-looking tree.
No, not at all. So I think that's all we got for site selection.
Yeah,
so,
I think that's a pretty broad range. Give you a good taste of what it's all about and some ideas to think of. So let's get into the species of the week.
Bur oak.
Yes.
One of the best.
One of my absolute favorite trees is the bur oak.
These big, majestic monster trees. Absolutely magnificent, I'd say.
So let's go through some of the traits of the bur oak. The Latin name for it is Quercus macrocarpa. And they are the definition of a long-lived, massive tree.
Absolutely.
We're talking 200 to 300 years in most cases for their longevity. I've heard the saying...
In a natural setting.
In a natural setting, not necessarily an urban one. But I've heard the saying, oaks grow for 50 to 100 years, live for 50 to 100 years, and then die for 50 to 100 years.
Mm-hmm. I've heard that too.
So if you're considering planting an oak, you are leaving a legacy. Mr. Sherwood said that earlier today when we were talking about this, and I think that's really cool because you're not going to live to see that tree in its prime. You know, you'll see it grow and become this big, nice tree, but let's say you plant it when you're 20. By the time you're 70, that tree's just going to be getting into the prime of its life.
Mm-hmm. That those big, really awesome, magnificent bur oaks that we see and love so much, those are ancient trees.
Very ancient.
You know, 100 to 300 years old. Those are the ones that are really awesome that
and
we look at.
You know the ones. They're like, let's wrap a tape measure around one, it would read 30 feet or something.
Let's like describe this tree a little bit for them so that everybody knows what we're talking about when we're saying bur oak. They've got leaves that are alternately arranged on the branch. They've got those really, really distinctive lobes around the shape of the leaf with one deep lobe in the middle. And the acorns are also very distinctive, really fuzzy cap that covers like around half of the acorn. And when they get old, they're really distinctive. They've got this kind of scraggly look, I might call it.
It almost looks eerie in a way if you see it in the winter when it doesn't have any leaves on it. I always think of it whenever I see them that I'm like walking through a cemetery or someplace kind of creepy because they really have a distinct form, which I personally love because it distinguishes them from all other trees.
Right. It's very recognizable when they're mature.
Right. It's even difficult to describe. Branches almost zigzag when they get out to the edges.
A little bit, they're a little zigzaggy.
If it's been growing for hundreds of years, those branches are going to be big branches that are doing this slightly zigzaggy appearance.
Yeah,
and it's really something that's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. And I'm looking at the native range map right now. It goes all the way through the middle of Canada in the north, and then all the way down to southern Texas even.
Yeah.
So it's got a pretty broad range, and it goes, looks like, all the way out to New York on the east and the edge of Montana on the west. So it's got a pretty big range right in the center of North America there. Yeah, I think it's zone 2 to 8, something crazy like that. So pretty much it can be planted just about anywhere in the United States with obviously some exceptions.
Yeah. So let's talk about the mature size of a tree. Because earlier Mr. Sherwood mentioned that you don't want to plant this close to your house. And I would totally agree with that. It might not be a problem in your lifetime if you plant it close to the house. But when that tree gets to its mature height of 70 to 80 feet with an 80-foot or more spread,
the spread is
just going to destroy your house. Because that's a heavy wood that's going to be just always bumping into the side of the house if you planted it too close.
Not to mention that trunk. Once it gets to be few feet in diameter,
it's huge. That's, it's in the way.
Yeah, we're talking 30, 40, 50, 60 inches in diameter. This is a big tree.
And so I think the coolest part about it is a slow grower, though. Right. Oaks are going to be something that you prune maybe every other year or something. Because
and that's
they
when
grow,
they're young.
They, yeah,
once
when
they
young,
get old, every 5, 10 years,
yeah,
even
that,
they're so slow.
You
yeah,
might have to
most.
Cut some of the dead stuff off. But it grows less than 12 inches per year, and they get that big. So that really gives you an idea of how long these things grow for.
Right.
I was just going to say,
they even only grow that much when they're young. Once they hit about 50 to 60, they turn reproductive and only grow 3-4 inches a year. Definitely no more than 6 in a great year even.
Right. And full sun for this one.
Yep.
That you're going to want to plant it in full sun. It loves to get just
it loves
a lot of sunlight.
Big open space. Yep. It's native to like a prairie.
Right.
If you think of a prairie or even a, like an oak savanna,
mm-hmm.
those are burrow
mm-hmm.
typically that
okay,
are just dotting
sure.
the prairie here
just
and there. Those big
cool.
massive trees have all the room they want to sprawl out. They like that kind of sandy soil and full
yeah.
wind and sun exposure.
I'm reading here. I'm on the National Arbor Day Foundation's
okay.
website.
What's that say?
It's telling me they can grow well in acidic, alkaline, loamy, sandy, well-drained, like wet and clay soils.
Oh,
it prefers moderate moisture, but also has some drought tolerance. So, you know,
mm-hmm.
that's why these trees can live for so long, is they tolerate stuff. You know, they tolerate a lot of different things. And, yeah, it's just unreal. They have this rounded shape to them, too, when they're fully mature, which I really like.
Yeah,
you know, it's this perfect, if you think of, like, what a tree should look like.
Stereotypical.
Yeah, stereotypical
awesome
tree you'd
tree.
See on, like, a picture or a cartoon or something.
Yeah, sprawling out and then a rounded head on it, rounded crown. And now I'm just looking online here at this cultivar, if you wanted to plant a bur oak in a little bit smaller space, if you didn't have a big sprawling area for it and you just wanted to fit it into a normal size yard, there's this cultivar called Urban Pinnacle Bur Oak, and it's been bred by J.F. Schmidt Nursery out on the Pacific Northwest coast, and it's got only a 25-foot spread and a
wow.
height of 55 feet at maturity.
Wow.
So this is a tree that looks like, I have no experience with it, but what I'm seeing here is it looks like it's going to encapsulate the kind of majesty of a bur oak in a more compact package for people that don't have quite as much space even. So,
right.
just a decent option that would definitely be worth looking into.
I know, you know, a lot. Space is getting limited.
Yeah, that's
when
true.
We're more and more urbanized, and that's
right.
why we need, it's great we have people breeding trees that are growing well in an urban setting, because that really
mm-hmm.
is the future of forestry right there is going to be urban forestry.
Yeah, we really got to credit these bur oak breeders.
Yeah.
I mean,
the amount of time you spend
the
a life
cycle, they can get maybe one generation in their lifetime, maybe
mm-hmm.
two if they, you know, use creative
Which
ways
in,
to
in
speed that up.
In terms of breeding, is just so slow.
That's yeah,
well,
it's amazingly
it's,
slow.
It
that's a really
guys
great
dedicate
feat.
Their life just to, you know, tracking and trying to breed this
yeah,
trees
are
tree,
one
it,
of the hardest crops to breed in the world.
But somebody has to do it, and we're really happy there are people out there doing it. Cause
yeah, absolutely.
It's
I'm,
super important.
I mean, for my breeding career, I'm mainly going to be focusing on shrubs most likely, just because they're a lot faster, but I'd love to breed trees. I really got to commend the guys that actually go ahead and take the time to deal with these long-lived trees.
Yeah.
So, as far as bur oak goes,
wraps up bur oak.
Yeah, there's a couple problems to mention. There's a couple diseases they can
get,
but no fear. I mean, they're still a great tree, but there's two diseases. One called bur oak blight that specifically attacks bur oak, and one called oak wilt that is more general to attack all the
mm-hmm.
oaks.
Red oaks and white oaks, too.
Right. Oak wilt is currently a problem in Minnesota and Wisconsin, whereas bur oak blight is kind of just showing up. So let's just talk about oak wilt, because that's the only one that's been experienced in this area pretty heavily so far.
Yeah, so it gets vectored by insects, and
right.
so that really is important, because that the means of controlling oak wilt is you gotta prune your oaks in the winter, guys.
Yeah.
You can't be doing it during the spring, or they don't even recommend doing it during the summer.
Don't, yeah, not at all during the growing season.
What happens
when there's
when
leaves
you,
on the trees,
right,
there's gonna
yeah,
be insects on the tree.
What happens when you prune that is it opens up the tree and all these like sugars and waters, they're very attractive to certain insects.
Mm-hmm.
I'm blanking on what the vector is for oak wilt right
oh,
now.
Oh, let's see. I got the page open.
Yeah, it's an insect that'll fly into that wound, and
well,
if it has oak wilt on
okay.
it.
Okay. It's a beetle.
Yeah,
I mean,
some type of beetle.
It only has a Latin name. We can call it Carpophilus sayi.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
I mean, there's no common name for it, but it's this oak wilt spreading beetle.
Mm-hmm. So they can spread this disease, and that's really when you see it taking off is when there's some improper pruning going on, or if a tree
yeah.
gets injured by a lawnmower or something.
Yep. And
so
one thing to mention is that oaks can graft their roots to each other underground.
It's super
important. And this disease, oak wilt, can be spread between two trees through root grafting. Right. So if you do end up with an oak wilt infestation, contact an arborist about trenching your trees. They'll know exactly what that means. It's basically just digging a trench around the circle of your tree that's infected, just so that it doesn't spread to your other oaks. That's only a problem if you have multiple oaks and one gets infected. Otherwise, just generally prune in the winter. That's the biggest thing you can do to not let your tree get oak wilt.
Right.
So. Yeah, that's it.
And like you said, not much many diseases for the oaks if you manage them well. So
right, they're pretty healthy trees overall. Yeah, let's wrap this up.
Yeah, this has been another episode of Treetop Talks. Man, I'm gonna get that one of these days.
Yeah,
you're listening to Andy Sherwood and Jay Halasik.
It's been great, guys. We'll see you next time.